the leader of the gang was a fairly intelligent guy. He was attending, you know, I learned this later, he was attending college. Actually, one of the things he was studying was criminal justice. And, you know, so he was a pretty smart guy. He had a job. He had a fiance. The other two guys were thugs, you know, basically the heat, guys carrying the guns. In the apartment, you have to understand also there were four more people. One was the guy who rented them the space in the apartment.
Wow.
And then there were three girls there, and I say girls advisedly, 16-year-old prostitutes.
Yikes.
The leader of the gang is their pimp. And, you know, they come over and they look at this well-dressed man who's sitting there on the mattress blindfolded, and they say, "What the hell are you doing? What did you drag home, boys?" Because, you know, really, these guys hadn't thought about it in advance. They just kind of did it on the spur of the moment to get at my money.
Okay. So you had what, a few hundred thousand dollars or something in the bank?
I had about $100,000 that I saved up from working at my law firm job for a few years.
Okay. So when you told them that, that's when the other plan began to form, I guess. What was the plan? What were they going to do? Next day, have you go to the bank?
So the idea was that in the morning, they were going to drive me. The first idea was to a drive-through bank, and then they decided it would be at a regular bank. They would drive me to the bank, and they would be waiting outside the bank with their guns, and I would withdraw $50,000, and, you know, they would shoot me if I didn't do it. You know, then they were talking about maybe one of them would come in the bank with me. Then when I got to the apartment and they were pointing the guns at my head, they were saying that they would blow my brains out if I didn't cooperate. You know, Stanley, you ever seen one of these machine pistols? All I got to do is pull this trigger, bam, 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 your brains will be all over that wall. But then they came up with a threat that was even worse than what I'm describing, because they told me that if I didn't cooperate, they would go to my father's apartment and kill him by breaking every bone in his body.
Oh, God. I was going to say, otherwise, just taking you to the bank under any circumstances and letting you walk in is not too bright, because you'd just stay there.
Well, that's right. And actually, as the night went by, they eventually realized that the plan didn't make any sense, and they changed it. But that was the original plan. And, you know, when they made the threat to kill my father, I got to tell you, that was probably the worst moment of the whole thing.
Sure.
You know, you can kill me, you can beat me, you can do anything you want to me, but the thought of somebody doing it to someone I love was just, you know, beyond horrifying. Just absolutely beyond horrifying.
So they made you tell where your father was, or they found out somehow?
So, you know, sometimes in life, Art, you do things that you think are good, and they end up coming around to bite you. I used to carry my father's business card on me. He was pretty much retired, but he was a cantor, which is the Jewish guy that sings in the synagogue, and he would marry people. You know, he married thousands of people in his career, so he kept a business card in case somebody, you know, needed for him to officiate at a wedding.
Sure.
And I felt that by carrying the card in my wallet, that I was sort of, it was like almost a good luck charm. I was helping my dad by carrying his card in my wallet, kind of like, you know, being proud of him. And it turns out, you know, he had his home address on it. So from that card, they could know where he lived. So as I say in the book, what I paved with good intentions became a road leading to hell. Because the thought that they would use that and go to my dad's was just devastating.
So they kept you on a mattress blindfolded the whole time?
That's right. That's right. They brought me into this crash pad apartment somewhere on the Brooklyn-Queens border. As I walked in, there was clothes on the floor. I could feel a lumpiness as I walked on top of people's clothing. They put me down on a mattress. You know, they wanted me to take off my shoes, which my instinct was not to do it. I thought, you know what, in their minds, they should have the idea that I'm going to walk out of here. And I didn't want to take off my shoes. And I kept my jacket on the whole time, and I sat there on that mattress for the next 24 hours or so.
So you refused to take your shoes off?
Yes, politely. You know, it was like, you know, Stanley, why don't you take off your shoes? And I said, well, thanks, you know, but I'll keep them on. You know, politely.
Yeah. And I'm sure you were sitting there, what, all this time, boy? 25 hours, I think this went on, right?
Yes, yes.
So you must have been trying to figure out, how am I going to escape, or can I escape?
You know, there's a moment. In the middle of the afternoon. The thugs who had grabbed me on the street had gone out for the day. I didn't know exactly what they were doing. I learned later that they were using my credit cards to buy things. And there was the fourth thug. Whose apartment it was, he was guarding me the whole day, and the three girls were there. And so it was a quieter time, and there were fewer people that could have killed me there. And, you know, I ran through my head, maybe I ought to try to either convince him to let me go or just kind of run for it. And it didn't make any sense. If I had made a move for the door,
yeah,
you know, I might have just ended up getting whacked in the head with the gun, you know, not even killed but hurt, and it just would have spiraled downward.
Could you see anything at all with this blindfold on, or was it really effective?
So it was it was my own scarf that they blindfolded me with, and when they brought me into the building at first, I could actually see out the bottom of the blindfold, and I saw the pattern of the tile in the building that they took me into.
Uh-huh.
And one of my favorite parts of this story is when I got out, I described that for the FBI and the NYPD. Well, guess what, Art? Within 48 hours, there are FBI agents out in that neighborhood going building to building looking for the pattern on the tiles that I had described.
Wow.
So that I love about it. And then when I got inside, I couldn't see out of it. There was one moment again in the afternoon when I was just with the one guy and the girls that he left the room, and I could tell that there was nobody else in there but me. And I just creaked my head back and looked out the bottom of the blindfold, and I could see just a little bit across the room, and I could see a little kid's red fire truck. You know, it looked like it was a place where a kid really lived.
Right.
And then as soon as the guy came back in the room, I snapped my head back down, and I didn't try to look again. You know, it was important that they not think that I could, you know, that I could see out of it.
Were your hands free?
My hands were free. Yeah, they actually, on the way back to the apartment, they bought duct tape to tie me up.
Right.
But I was so cooperative that they never bothered to use it.
I suppose that's the way to be. Did that cooperation really pay off? I mean, it relaxed them apparently enough so they didn't do that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know what? After I got out, I read an article that I talk about in the book. That describes what you're supposed to do in a hostage situation. And a lot of what I did on instinct was sort of just the right thing. You can't get anywhere by challenging them. You have to be cooperative, put them at ease. It even says you ought to use humor after the first hour because that may help. Again, you have to be very careful how you use it.